I did a crime, and that's what I used to be. Now I did tshuva, so I'm different. Tshuva means you can change. I used to be a criminal, I'm not a criminal anymore, because I changed, because I came, became better. Tshuva means that real change is possible. Okay, if real change is possible, it's possible in both directions. Real change is not only up, it's also down. So the right way to describe the scenario that I gave you is that a Yom Kippur went up, and in April he went down. The fact that he goes down in April doesn't mean he didn't go up in Yom Kippur. He went both ways, up and down. The tshuva in Yom Kippur is valid, and he gets all the benefits. And the deterioration in April is a new failure. It does not reinstate the failures from the previous year. It's a new failure. It has its own consequences, but it does not reinstate the problems from the previous year. Temporary tshuva is valid tshuva. We say in the Shemona Esrei, Chanun Hamarbe L'Sloach, God is gracious, Marbe, which means a lot, L'Sloach, to forgive. A lot to forgive. He forgives a lot. What's the Marbe here? In grammar, it's not so easy to figure out what it is. The Palatanya says, he forgives over and over again. Over and over again, even for the same aver. He forgives over and over again. How do you know on Yom Kippur that you're not just fooling yourself? How do you know that the resolve is really there and you're not just pretending? I haven't seen this anywhere. Everything I've said until now is in the sources. I haven't seen, but I would offer the following criterion. Let's imagine that right there in Shul on Yom Kippur, the opportunity presents itself to commit the same aver, the one you do with Yom. Would you be able to say no? It's Lashon Hara. And I know that I've spoken Lashon Hara, and I've listened to Lashon Hara, and I haven't stopped people, other people speaking Lashon Hara, and I'm guilty, and I'm doing tshuva for it. Now it's the break between Musaf and Mincha. 45 minutes. People are relaxing. But they should be doing something. They're relaxing, talking, and somebody says to me, did you hear about Reuven? Reuven? Oh, I've got a story to tell you about Reuven. And I think, just 10 minutes ago, I was saying Al-Khait, you know? And I was in the middle of Shemona Esrei, and I was clapping Al-Khait, you know? And now I'm going to speak Lashon Hara. I can't do that. And I say to the other guy, listen, it's Yom Kippur, I can't do that. I'm not going to talk Lashon Hara. I'm doing tshuva for that. I'm just not doing it. So that already means that it's not a joke. You're not fooling yourself. You're not pretending. Because right then and there, it's enough to save you from an aver. Okay. Outside in the world with all of its distractions and worries and temptations and all the rest, maybe I can't. Maybe I'm not able to muster the courage and the will to succeed. But that doesn't mean that my resolve now is a joke or is self-deception. It doesn't apply. Not usually, because there you're in shul and you're kipper. Right? So it's not shul. Have to do all the same conditions. Yeah.
It's like, do something wrong, and
then,
or I have to do
truly.
You say that, and
I do
wrong,
because I do truly. I'm not up to that yet. I haven't got to that point yet. Now, I want to take this idea one step further. We're talking now about doing tshuva as a process. I suggested getting control of your actions as a first step, and only afterwards working on changing your personality. Let's push it back and make it more of a slow process, more of a piecemeal process. What about a person who says, I can't conquer all the actions in this area at once, so I'll do part of it, but the rest of it I'm not going to work on. Lashon Hara. So I know it's wrong and it's terrible and I want to stop. But to promise that from now on I'm never going to say anything bad about anybody else. And when anybody says anything bad to me about somebody else, I'm going to stop him or close my ears. That's too much. I can't take that much on. But what about 2 hours a day? Like 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. No, okay, let's be serious. 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. 2 hours a day. So I get a call at 3:30 and the other guy says, did you hear about Philip, boy? I got a story about Philip. Yeah, let's hear about Philip. Ooh, it's 3:30. Could you call back at 4:15? Because yeah, these are my two clean hours. And at 4:15, then we could, talk maybe. Now, is there any value in this idea of stopping Lashon Hara for 2 hours, but allowing yourself freedom to commit the aveira the rest of the time? Wouldn't this be hypocrisy? What is hypocrisy? Hypocrisy, they'll tell you, means I say it's wrong, but I do it. That's a hypocrite. A person who says something's wrong and really believes it shouldn't do it. Here I'm saying it's wrong, and I'm doing it. That's a hypocrite. And many people will tell you, it's true, I do this thing that's wrong. It's wrong, and I shouldn't do it. And I could stop part of it, but then I'll be a hypocrite. And that's one fault I don't have. I'm not a hypocrite. I'm an honest person. So I'm waiting for the time when I'll be able to stop at 100%. Then I'll be able to stop and I won't be a hypocrite. This is a mistake. This is a terrible, tragic mistake. It's a mistake in the concept, and it's a mistake in application. It's a mistake in morality, and it's a mistake in spirituality. It hasn't got one shred of value. The whole thing is a mistake. I'll show you it's a mistake. And then I'll explain to you why it's a mistake. You know what a kleptomaniac is? The person who can't help stealing. He really can't help it. Goes into stores and he puts stuff in his pocket. Now imagine a kleptomaniac say, this is terrible, I'm going to end up in the prison. I'm in danger the whole time. And I really got to stop this, not to mention the fact that I'm taking other people's property, which doesn't belong to me. And I think that I have the strength to stop it from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. I shop at all different hours of the day and so forth and so on, but I can stop it from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. But that's all. In the morning, I'm going to steal. And at night, I'm going to steal. It'll just be 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. So that's hypocrisy. So I'm going to steal all the time, even 2 to 4. Rather than cut out the 2 for 4, because that'll make me a hypocrite. I don't think anybody would be in favor of that. Right? That's clearly a mistake. What would we tell him? Don't! You can improve 2 to 4! And all those things won't be stolen! Okay, you'll steal the rest of the time. But at least 2 to 4 is improved! Why shouldn't you improve what you can? Take what you can! And maybe, if you succeed in improving 2 to 4, and it becomes a habit, and becomes ingrained, and becomes natural and easy, then you make it 2 to 5. And then 1 to 5. And then 1 to 6. And gradually you can expand to improve yourself more and more. Maybe the only way you can make progress is piecemeal progress, step-by-step progress. You're never going to get up enough courage, enough strength to knock it all off in one shot. So why deny yourself? Number one, if you stop 2 to 4, immediately you're better. You're not cured, but you're better than you were before. And number two, that may be the way, step by step, to become cured. So, of course, that's the right thing to do. Step by step progress is the right thing to do. Why isn't it hypocrisy? Because they had the wrong definition of hypocrisy. A hypocrite is not a person who says he believes in something and fails to do it. A hypocrite is a person who says he believes in something and doesn't try to do it. As long as he tries, honestly to do it, he's not a hypocrite. Here's Fred. Remember Fred? Fred tells you smoking is terrible. See, that's my alter ego, right? When you hear Fred saying that, you know it's me talking. Smoking is terrible, and it's awful, and it's unhealthy. And as he tells you how terrible smoking is, he takes out a cigarette and he lights it up and he starts blowing smoke rings. And, oh, smoking's awful! Puff, puff. So you say to him, Fred, what kind of joke is this? Here you are telling me that smoking is terrible. And you yourself are smoking. So Fred says, listen, once a week I go to a group therapy session. We have a psychologist who gives us sessions on how to stop smoking. And I have a private hypnotist who gives a hypnotic suggestion to stop smoking. And there are nicotine withdrawal medications. And I'm taking these medications. It just hasn't worked yet. Is Fred a hypocrite? Not at all. Even though he's smoking, but he's trying. He's trying his best not to smoke. That's enough to make him not a hypocrite. So here too, a person who can make progress step by step, such a person is not at all a hypocrite. I'll give you some examples from real life where people are, who fall into this trap and have to be explained to them why it is a trap and that they shouldn't hold themselves back in this way. Kashrus. Endless numbers of times people say, I could keep kosher at home. That's easy enough. I control my own home environment. I can control my purchases, my diet. It's up to me. But at school, at work, in social situations, I just can't handle that. I know I can't handle it. I'm not ready for that. And to keep kosher at home and eat treif outside, that's hypocrisy. I mean, either you believe in kosher or you don't. If you believe in kosher, you keep kosher. Right. So, they say, I'm not going to keep kosher at home and eat treif outside. I'm waiting for the time when I have the strength to keep 100% kosher. Now, here you have the double mistake. First of all, if he makes his home kosher, 60% of his meals are going to be kosher now. You're responsible for every bite. 60% of his bites now are going to be good bites instead of bad bites. That's certainly a gain. And second of all, by keeping kosher at home, by making kosher part of your habits, by buying foods that are kosher and thinking about making sure that your kitchen remains kosher, you gradually develop your attachment to kashrus so that eventually you will be able to make the break. We had a fellow here about 12 years ago in the summer, 6-week program. First time in his life he ever experienced Shabbos. 6 weeks in a row. In the end, he came to me and he said, you know, Shabbos was beautiful and inspiring, impressive. I have a problem. I'm going back to Michigan State University. At Michigan State University, the number one priority is?
Football.
You got it. Football. And number two is football, number three is football, number four is parties, and number five is, I don't know, studying about number nine. Right. And he says to me, football games are Saturday afternoon, and don't talk to me about football. That's, you know, holy of holies. Football is there. It's a fixture. I'm not giving that up. But he said, on the other hand, I really enjoyed Shabbos. I was inspired by Shabbos. What do you think I should do, Rabbi? That's what rabbis are for, right? To adjudicate between Shabbos and football. So I said to him, keep Friday night. So far as I know, even the football addicts have to do with how football Friday night. No games Friday night. Now listen, what I'm going to tell you now in the next 30 seconds is very important. Don't anyone be fooled here. Shabbos is 25 hours, period. Shabbos is 25 hours. None of the nonsense that if only God had known about football, he surely would have made an exception for Saturday afternoon. Just poor God, you know, how can you expect him to know 3,000 years ago that football would be invented, you know? Leave that kind of studio for various people whom we won't name at the moment. That belongs to kindergarten. Shabbos is 25 hours. But if you can't keep all 25 hours, there's no reason to throw all of it out. Keep as much of it as you can. Don't redefine Shabbos. That's the coward's way out. That's the hypocrite's way out. No, honestly say, Shabbos is 25 hours, and I'm not doing all of it, because I'm not up to doing all of it, but I'll do as much as I can. The hope then is, first of all, then Friday night, you have kept Shabbos. You haven't done anything wrong. That's definitely a plus. And number two, if you do keep Shabbos Friday night regularly, then maybe you'll calculate after a while, you know, I could go to Shabbos. I could go to Shul Shabbos morning. The football game's in the afternoon. They don't have football games at 10 in the morning. None of those people are up at 10 in the morning. Right? So, I'll go to Shul in the morning, and then, you know, then I'll go to the football game. And eventually, he's keeping three quarters of the Shabbos, and hopefully this inspirational Shabbos will carry him to the point where he'll be able to give up the football games. Even if it's a question of keeping one Shabbos a month, person that says, I cannot give up all the activities of Shabbos forever, but I could do it one Shabbos a month, then start with one Shabbos a month. Here is the rule. Every mitzvah can be subdivided. Every mitzvah can be subdivided. And the subdivisions can be subdivided. And it is valid to divide them into as small pieces as the person is ready to take on. And then do it piece by piece. You surely know that in the Siddur, there's a whole level of what's more important, what's less important. For many people, more than 7 minutes of davening a day is too much. It just can't handle it. So for such a person, we say, then do 6 minutes. Don't even push yourself to the limit. It's too much. 6 minutes. I'll show you what the most important things are to say for 6 minutes. And start with those 6 minutes. And after you become fluent in the text, and you understand it, and it becomes easy for you, and it feels natural to you, then we'll go to 7 minutes. And then we'll go to 8 minutes. There's no such thing. You have to do it all, or you haven't done anything. There's no such thing. There are limits to how much we can do. Everyone that I know has gone through the following scenario. Everyone, I don't think there's any exception. You're at an early stage in your absorption of Jewish practice, Jewish law, and you're in a great public area. For us Americans, where things are really big, it's Grand Central Station. Grand Central Station can easily hold 100,000 people. Now, that's a big building. Now, it's 6:22, and it suddenly occurs to you that the sun is going down at 6:30, and you have not davened mincha. Oh my, what am I going to do? Mincha. Walk over to the wall and start to weave and bop for 5 minutes. It's a little, I don't know, embarrassing. Of course, in Grand Central Station you can find anything. Whatever you want, going there someplace. Right? But still, that's those people. You know, for me, it's just embarrassing. Now, there's a solution to this problem. Everybody who's gone through the development of taking on Jewish practice knows the solution. The solution is the telephone booth. You go over, you put in a quarter, and you make a long distance call. Everybody I know has done this. I used to do it also. And everybody I know who has done it eventually has outgrown it. Because, truthfully, it shouldn't be necessary. Suppose you're standing at Grand Central Station and a guy walks over and he says, I have $1 million bank check for you. Walk over to the wall and weave and bob for 10 minutes. What would you do? I don't know about you, but I would be there instantly, weaving and bobbing. $1 million in 10 minutes, you know, I could do a lot with $1 million, thank you very much. Right? Now, every mitzvah that you do, any mitzvah that you do, earns you more than $1 million. It earns you an infinite compensation, because it's eternal. So you should be able to walk over to the wall and daven mincha with a sense of privilege, and a sense of thankfulness, that makes the whole world just fade away. You should, but you can't. And so you go to the telephone booth. because your psychology is really limited. So you daven mincha in the telephone booth. I guarantee you, you'll outgrow it. You have to be realistic about your psychology. And if your psychology can only take a piece of a mitzvah, then take that piece and work on it step by step. Should you cover your head? Use a cap. I know people who started with a toupee. The head is covered. Nobody knows it's covered. Because what you have on your head is a piece of hair, right? But it's covered. You could wear a blue jacket. I mean, you could wear a rum. You know, until you graduate to one of these, you know, it could take a while. 2 or 3 lifetimes. You know. It could take a while. Take each step on the grounds that you're ready to take it. Tshuva, unlike certain other mitzvahs, tshuva, any little piece of tshuva is valid and gets you some recognition. And the same thing is true with other mitzvahs in terms of learning them and taking them on. Any little piece of it is worthwhile as a stepping stone to the progress that you can make. This is gradual tshuva, gradual tshuva. And this is not only for, this is not only for people who grew up in a non-religious home, non-religious background. This is for every Jew. Because every Jew has areas of failure, areas that need improvement. I would say almost every Jew anyway has multiple areas of failure and has to set priorities. I can't handle all of them at once, so I'll do this one. I'll leave the other one for next year when I have more strength. And everyone uses this strategy of breaking it up into pieces and take it step by step. Don't despise little steps. This is the counsel of the Yetzer Hara, of the Satan, says to you, that's all you're going to do? 6 minutes a day? That's low. That's not worthy of you. You're a great person. You're a noble person. You're only going to do 6 minutes a day? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Wait until you can do 20 minutes! What does he really mean? What he really means is, I know you're never going to get to 20 minutes, so I've got you in my pocket. You're never going to get there. Don't despise little steps. How big is a brick? You know, it's not a very big stone, right? A brick? Single brick? Now you go to Manhattan. There are buildings 80 stories tall built out of bricks. Bricks! A person look at a brick and say, hey, what can you do with that? You know, it's so small, forget it. But you can build those gigantic office buildings and residential buildings in Manhattan out of bricks. Only you got to have the strength to put lots of them together. Well, make every day a brick. How many days have you got left? Can't let your pocket calculators and figure out the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of days that you have left. You have a long time. Lots of bricks. Treat each brick as precious. Make your steps. Small ones, ones you feel comfortable with, ones you feel confident about. Yes, I can handle that. Yes, I want to handle it. I'll be proud of handling it. It'll give me joy to know that I've taken that step. Take those steps. Take them one at a time. And the results, over time, as you accumulate them, will be very surprising to you. Last word, then I'm going to take questions. A little recommendation to help move you along. Keep a diary. Just write down what's bothering me, what I'm hoping for, what my challenges are. Make an entry once a week. Go back and look at it a year later. You'll be shocked. You don't realize how different you are now from where you were a year ago. Because you lived through it day by day. The difference from day to day doesn't feel like much. But you look back a year before and look where you are. You'll be shocked at how much progress you made. And then you'll appreciate how much progress you can make by accumulating small steps. Okay. Questions from the awesome crowd. Before I retire with the specialized staff. Yeah.
I
love that.
I
am the
quote. I don't know
if
you're doing
on the ground, I know he's doing the bear on the ground, so I'm going to do shiva for it.
Right. So this is they explain that resolving can mean that not right now, but you might even do it the next time.
No, but those are two separate things. Well, you can't plan to do the Aveira again. That's not resolving to change.
No, but if you know you're going to do it again, is that called doing Shuva and knowing you're going to do it again? Which means you know.
You can't know. You can't know. You can't know. Whether you're able to change depends upon the help that God, of course, Baruch Hu gives you. It depends upon the circumstances. It'll be under. Nobody can say, I know I'm going to fail.
No, so chances are, again, if it comes up.
Well, chances are. Right. If it's only chances are, I would say, don't think about it.
Probability.
Ooh, why think about it? Why think about it?
Because I want to get the probably in a week from now, it comes up again, and I know about the BS
phone. You shouldn't say, I know. Saying I know is a way of defeating yourself. Since you say I know, therefore you know it's not worth a try, and you've given up already. That's not right.
6 days doing something good today. I'm wondering if like that is not so bad. But by the seventh day, will be you will break one time. This
you
day.
Don't know anything. You do not know what you will do in the future. You cannot know.
No, the reality, you know yourself. It's not
possible. Okay, I'm telling you, you can't know. You cannot know what you're going to do in the future.
This is 6 years doing shoe runs.
You know, it's like anything else in sports. You try to break a record. And then, over and over again, you break your own record and you improve. You don't know which time you're going to do it. But you don't say, since I failed 7 times in a row, I'm not going to do it the 8th time. The 8th time, you succeed and you overcome it. So, you should not say to yourself, I know I'm going to fail. That's you don't know the future, that's all.
The future is not real.
That's right. If you say, I know I'm going to fail, then the truth is not real. You have to say, I made up my mind not to do it. You'll ask me to guarantee in blood that I won't do it, that I cannot do. I can't. But on the other hand, I won't say I know I'm going to fail. Yeah, that's sort of precluding God's freedom to make the thing work the way He wants it to make it work. Yeah.
So I think it was mentioned to him. Was let's say you're doing a bear that you decide when you're doing your bear that you're going to do chew later on.
Yeah, this is very interesting. The Gemara says, "Ha Omer, echtav Oshuv, ain't maspikim biyadol asos shuv." The person says, "I'll do the Avera, and then I'll do Shuv." You told me that Shuv wiped it out, right? So I easily have a way to wipe it out. So I'll just wipe it out, so I can get away with it, right? I'll do the Shuv, I'll do the Avera now, I'll do the Shuv later, and then I'll wipe it out. This is logically absurd. It's logically incoherent. There's a mistake of logic here. Because think what tshuva means. Tshuva means regret. Regret means I wish I hadn't done it. But now the way you're picturing it, why should you wish you hadn't done it? You've got it worked out, so everything's going to be perfect. Do the Aveira now, and you get the pleasure of it. Later you do tshuva, and you're not responsible for it, and everything worked out beautifully. So why should you wish you hadn't done it? This thought, I'll do the Aveira and then I'll do tshuva and I'll get out of it, contradicts thinking later, I wish I hadn't done it. So this thought is really a thought of not doing tshuva. That's it's an incoherent thought.
No, you said before that you could do something you don't know is a self-destruct.
I'm not saying there's a psychological limitation here. I'm not saying it's a psychological, I'm saying it's a logical limitation. The thought, it's sort of like saying, I'm going to go out and buy a circular bar with 4 corners. But just a moment. You know, if it's circular, it doesn't have 4 corners. That doesn't matter. It'll be a circle with, you know, and then a circle with 4 corners. That's what it'll be. It'll be that kind of circle, a circle with 4 corners. That's not a psychological limitation. It's a logical limitation. It's a contradiction. What am I saying? I'm saying, I'm going to do the Aveira. I do tshuva. Because that package is a good package. That's the package I want, right? That's the package I'm endorsing. Doing the Aveira and doing tshuva. But part of the tshuva is to say, I wish I hadn't done the Aveira. Now, given that I've chosen the package, and I chose it because that's the package I want, how am I going to say later, I wish I hadn't done it?
You can, otherwise then it will be real tshuva.
Okay, but I can't plan that.
Right.
I can't plan now to do it on the grounds that this is what I want, and say, and later I'll say that I don't want it. I mean it. Something in me will have to be different then, right? I can't stay with this resolve then. If I carry this resolve out to the end, I will never get to its end. I'll never get to the truth of it. Yeah.
A couple of days ago, the rabbi just said about the Holocaust, the people in the Holocaust were all Gilguls of the people who had been wicked. He also said the same of the baby who who is the Gilgal of Rav Yosef Karo. How does the idea of Teshuvah go along with something which sort of seems preordained for being a Gilgal?
Okay, this is very, very important, and it's interesting that you should put it together in that kind of distance. This is an interesting connection. I want to repeat it and make a closer connection, and then I'm going to stop with everybody, and then I'll continue with the group that's coming from the outside. Let me take a closer example, and from it your example will be clear. The Rambam says you only are required to do tshuva for something you did deliberately. It means I knew it was wrong, and I had the capability of not doing it, and I chose to do it. Or shogeg, which means negligently. I didn't know, but I should have known. I had a responsibility to know. And I had the ability to know, I just was lazy or irresponsible, and I didn't know. Those are the conditions, okay, for the tapes. There may be one or two exceptions, but this is the basic idea. Something which you have no control over, something which is beyond your ability, or you didn't know and you couldn't have known, you had no responsibility to know, that's neither mazid or shogeg, it's neither deliberate nor negligent. And that being the case, you don't do tshuva for it. You have no responsibility to do tshuva for it. Might even not even be possible to do tshuva for it. Which means that a person, for example, who grew up in a non-religious home and never had any idea of what Shabbos is, does not do tshuva for the fact that he didn't keep Shabbos. So you'll say, oh, but come on, I come from South Africa, and in South Africa everybody knows what Shabbos is. It's a traditional society. In England, almost every Jew knows what Shabbos is. That's not knowledge. That's not knowing what Shabbos is. In South Africa, there are people who grow up with the idea, and even more so in England, that different tribes have different customs. The Zulus have some customs, and the Umbagis have another custom, and the Jews have another custom, and the British have another custom, and the Alaskans have another. They're all customs. Everybody has different customs. That's not knowing what Shabbos is. Knowing what Shabbos means, knowing that there's a creator, and that he told the Jews that they can't do melacha on Shabbos. That he didn't know. Indeed, he was sure that that's not true. He was sure that the Jewish customs are no more significant than the Zulu customs. And under those conditions where his whole environment is constructed that way, he has no access to the truth, he's not responsible for what he does. Bethesda says it's even on stealing. Well, that stealing is supposed to be illogical, but Bethesda says if your whole environment is around the thieves, there's nobody in the environment telling you that stealing is wrong, you're not responsible for stealing. You have no bechira, you have no free choice about stealing, you're not responsible for it. So certainly all the more so for Shabbos. So that being the case, a person does not do tshuva. Certainly, if it's a question of what happened in a previous Gilgal, and I'm totally unaware of it, so no question about having to do tshuva for that. What the Bible statement meant was that God will put the person through in this life what he needs, so that the rectification will take place, but not that he consciously does anything about it.
You said earlier today as well that just like when the Russians were there, they should have gone to the hills and fought. So too, when there was the Holocaust, they should have done tshuva.
For the things that they have done wrong. Everybody does something wrong. Right? It's not another question. I see now what you meant. Very good. That's really very good. I didn't think of that connection. That's very good. But again, it doesn't mean that they didn't do anything wrong in this life. It meant that the things they did wrong were not nearly sufficient to justify the kind of suffering they went through. Right? But for the things that they did wrong, they should have done true.
So
that's a very nice question.
Huh? If they had done tshuva, they wouldn't have saved them.
It might have. It might have. It was about what the tshuva required for them. Yeah, it might have. Okay. That is this show. For those who came, there's another group here. Upstairs, there are all the classes. Next class, I'll be. Yes,
your class. Over here.